Welcome to the Finding Grace in the Wilderness podcast. I'm your host, Sharon Hawkins. Here each week, we will share stories about how God's grace can be found during life's most difficult circumstances. Meet with me around the table as we chat with others who have found that God's faithfulness never ends. We will share truth and life and discuss faith, fears, struggles, and victories. Join us as we seek to grow deeper in relationship with Jesus, the one who makes a way in the wilderness and rivers in the desert. Hi, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Finding Grace in the Wilderness. I'm so glad you're back today. We will be continuing with part two of my interview with my dear friend Marie Koth. Marie will pick up where she left off in sharing about her experience with Al-Anon and finding God's peace in the midst of living with loved ones who were struggling with alcoholism. God made a way in the wilderness for her and her family. Let's join back for the rest of her story.
After some time of being in Al-Anon in recovery, I was, of course, one of the things that recovery will tell you is that you have no control over anybody but yourself. Mm-hmm. You can't control what another person does. And I was so miserable from trying to deal with three of them that I latched on to that. And of course, my walk with the Lord was getting stronger. And so I gave all three of them to him. And the verses that really helped me with that was Philippians 4, 6, and 7, which says, "Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving." That's an important part of it. "Let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus." And I gained that peace that passes all understanding because I went to him. I stopped trying to deal with them at all. I just put all three of them in his hands. So now that I didn't have to try to fix them, which I couldn't do, and I just let them be, I no longer had all the anxiety. I no longer was constantly stressed. And I had peace. But the important part is with thanksgiving. And this I learned, you know, no matter what happens in our lives, there's something that we can learn from it. And so, I mean, I started with the attitude through that whenever something difficult happens, because life is going to continue to throw difficulties. That doesn't end as long as we're here on this earth.
That's the truth.
And so my attitude is, okay, Lord, I don't know what you want me to learn from this, but show me what it is that you want me to learn and help me to learn it quickly so I can get through it. And he's always done that. Yeah, but I had a change of attitude towards it. Instead of, you know, why me, whatever, I just said, show me what you want me to learn. And I had huge trust issues from all that went on in my home growing up. And I had to learn that I could, it was a journey. I had to learn that I could trust God, that he was completely trustworthy. And so I started out taking small things to him in prayer. And then I would see him answer. And I gradually gave him bigger and bigger things until I, you know, over and over and over again, I saw that I could trust him. So I got over my trust issues. Yeah. And I there's no better place to put any difficulty in our lives than in his hands.
Right.
He's the one that has, he sees everything. I always say, you know, we see one pixel of whatever we're in and he sees the whole picture. So he knows what needs to happen and he knows what he needs to do through us. So I let him do it.
Yeah, and we can test him.
Yes.
He wants us to test him.
Yeah. And I did a lot of that early on until I realized that, yes, I can completely trust him. Mm-hmm. It was a journey, but I got there.
Yeah.
And when I obtained that peace and I had joy and peace in my walk with the Lord. And Chris saw that. He was still miserable, Because before I got into recovery and before I really surrendered everything to the Lord, I acted pretty crazy. I mean, I yelled and screamed a lot. I mean, I was off the wall. And so when I changed, he had to look at himself. He couldn't point the finger at me anymore because I was peaceful. I was joyful. I was doing great. Yeah. I mean, and so one of the things in recovery, and especially in AA's, and even in Al-Anon, they say it's by attraction, not promotion. And that's what that was. It was attraction. He saw the change in me and he wanted what I had. It still took a long time for him to get there. I prayed for him for 6 years because it was almost a year after I found out about Al-Anon before I actually went and started working on everything. And one of the things that I did, I had to wait until I was strong enough and healthy enough to do it. But I had him sign a contract. And I let him know, I said, I love you. I don't want a divorce. But I've been living with alcoholism in my life for most of my life. And I'm tired of it. I'm not willing to do this anymore. I'm done. What it said was, the next time that you drink, you have two choices. You either go the next day into a treatment program, or you move out until you're ready to do that. And I knew that we lived in a little townhouse and we didn't have a big mortgage, so I knew that I could survive. It would be tight, but I could survive on my income by myself. And it took a while, you know, and of course there were times where, yeah, he's drinking. But I waited till he was very drunk, where he couldn't deny that he was drinking.
Right.
And I had him sign it that day when I presented it to him. We both signed it, dated it, and I hid it where he wouldn't find it. And so this one time he came in from work and he sat down on his desk and he was very drunk. And I just went and got it, put it in front of him. And he said he was tired of living the way he was, but it's very scary to change, even though you know you need to. Like, just like it was for me. It was hard to face my baggage.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that was the push he needed. The next morning, he went to a recovery program and went all the way through it. His alcoholism was so bad, he was right on the line of whether he had to go inpatient or he could do it outpatient. He did it outpatient. And he went to a meeting every single day for 5 years in order to maintain his sobriety. And then, you know, of course, we started going to church on mm-hmm. Sunday. Eventually, he got to where church replaced a meeting, so he didn't go to a meeting on Sunday. But
so at which point during all of that did he accept Christ?
Oh, when he got sober, when he went to the treatment program the next day, okay. That was his bottom.
Which is what happened for you.
Yeah.
When you came back, you were already saved, but you came back.
Yeah.
We
both had to get to a bottom. I think even if people don't go through a tough time in their life and go way down the wrong road or anything, I mean, every Christian has to get to the point of total surrender. For God to use us fully in the plan that he has for our lives, we have to completely surrender to him. For every single Christian. You know, and for me, it was that I couldn't deal with three alcoholics anymore. And so, yes, he accepted Christ. He didn't go through any saying a prayer or anything. It's just he surrendered. He knew because... You know, he was married to me, and he saw the change, you know, what I went through, and he knew what the process was, but he hadn't done it yet.
Right.
He wasn't ready to surrender.
Well, he had been reading the Bible.
And he had been reading.
So
when you start reading reading the
amazing.
Bible, you're at great risk of becoming a
That's
Christian.
Right. That's right.
God working in you. So,
yeah,
he knew the deal. He knew what he had to do. So, I mean, does everybody have to say the sinner's prayer? No. Mm-hmm. It's the heart. God knows, you know, when we totally surrender everything to him and give it to him and give him our lives, you know, and stop fighting for control, right. then he can use us. And so, yes, he got sober at the and saved at the same time. Mm-hmm. He surrendered to God at the same time that he went to the treatment program. And so it was, that was in 1988 when he got sober. And a year later, we left that church. We found out that the Presbyterian, you know, the Presbyterian church has a hierarchy. And the Presbyterian USA, we found out, supported groups that favored abortion. And so we left. And we ended up in a community church because one of Chris's brother's pastor went to Bible college or something with the pastor of that church in Miami. Mm-hmm. So when they came to visit, they went there. So we didn't know where else to go. So we went there. Well, it happened that, like, I don't know, 6 months or so after we went there, there were things going on in the church, and they had different pastors, and there was a teaching pastor. And so when all the upheavals happened, he started a home church. Okay. And so we went with him because mm-hmm. we needed to grow in God's word. You know, we were babies at this. Right. And so we were doing that. And it was a year after Chris got sober while we were going there. And God just led us to start a recovery ministry that was Christ-centered and Bible-based. AA is wonderful. Al-Anon is wonderful. And the reason that they don't name the higher power is because a lot of people are angry at God. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't, if they went to a meeting and God was up front and center, they wouldn't go back because they're still angry. But people that stay in Al-Anon or AA, and I guess I've never been to NA, but I guess for that, they all end up with, people that have long-term sobriety end up with the right higher power. Mm-hmm. You know, but God led us to specifically start one that was based on Jesus and the Bible. And we used other recovery materials, mm-hmm. because there's a lot of good recovery materials mm-hmm. out there. But we have a small Bible, a Serenity Bible. It has the New Testament and Psalms and Proverbs in it. And it has the 12 steps. And then you read about that step, and then it gives you the scriptures that talk about that step. And it goes all the way through. Like, you go to the first one, and then it tells you, okay, go to this page for the next one.
Wow, wow.
And so it incorporates the Bible into it. It's a combination of recovery, you know, regular recovery stuff, mm-hmm. but the Bible and God, you know. Mm-hmm. And of course, we always, if somebody comes in and they don't have a relationship with Christ, they're presented the gospel. Because that's God is what's necessary to truly heal. Mm-hmm. He's the only one that can completely heal us from our trauma.
Right. And the fact that you're hosting it now in a church.
Yes.
You're sure they probably, when they walk in the door, they know it's going to be Christian-based.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Although AA and Al-Anon meetings are housed in churches. Yeah. Right. I mean, that's how we ended up going to that mm-hmm. Presbyterian church, because that's where the Al-Anon meeting was. Mm-hmm. So they do host them. They just allow them to use a room on whatever night they have their meetings. Right. But yeah, ours is specifically Christ-centered and Bible-based. And it just amazes me that we've been doing it for 36 years.
Wow. That's crazy.
It's a long time. And God never wastes anything.
No.
No matter what kind of mess we make in our lives, as long as we give it to Him, and let Him clean us up from it, He won't waste it. And so, I mean, He obviously didn't waste it. It wasn't our idea to start a recovery ministry. It was His. Mm-hmm. And so for all of these years, we've been able to help people that are struggling with it. And we have both aspects of it. You know, if somebody comes into our meeting and they're trying to deal with their addiction to drugs or alcohol, we're a supplementary meeting. Because when somebody has a drug or alcohol addiction, like Chris did, they need to go to a lot of meetings. And they need to go to AA meetings. Because it's specific to that. And Al-Anon, you know, we don't have Al-Anon meetings in this area. I think the closest one is in Greenville. But they can come to our meetings so that they get the Christian part. They get God, the real God, you know, a specific God, and they get Jesus. But for family, and it's just interesting that the majority of the people that God brings to our ministry are family members or people who have grown up in a family with addiction. And it's, even though they haven't even used alcohol or drugs themselves, but they don't know how to have healthy relationships. It's had a huge impact on their life. And it's the kind of thing, there are people that think, okay, you're going to get off drugs or alcohol. All you need is God. All you need to do is go to church. But that doesn't work for everybody. In fact, I don't think it works for very many people, because we need the framework.
Right.
To know how, it's just so overwhelming. We need a framework to know how to approach it, and to learn what other people have learned, because there are practical things that we can do to deal with addicts in our lives. I mean, praying for them is number one. You know, like I prayed for Chris for 6 years, and I continued to pray for. We still pray for each other all these years later. But it does help. I mean, the 12 steps do help, because it does provide that framework to tackle it all.
But you know, and I'll quote Romans 8:28 that was so important. It says, "And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose." It doesn't say everything is going to be good in our lives, but all things will work for good. They, you know, he will use it for good. What Satan intends to tear down and destroy, he will use for good. And that's exactly what happened in both our lives.
And it says all, not all good things or all bad things, but
all things will work together for the good.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's, and, you know, and that is important to me, and to see that, you know, that God led us to do that so early on. I mean, well, I had been in recovery for 6 years when he got sober. So I, by the time God led us to do that, I had 7 years. And because I was a family member, I could help, and I grew up in it. Mm-hmm. I could deal with those that grew up in a mess or had family members still actively addicted to whatever they were addicted to. Right. And he could address the people that were in an addiction. Mm-hmm. So yeah, God knows what he's doing. Isn't he?
It's amazing when you go back and go through this again. And it's good for us to be reminded from time to time about our story and what we've been through. That he had an answer for all of it. He had a plan for all of it.
He did.
From day one, even from saving you when you were 8, because that was going to happen at 9. And being there with the little girl in the closet.
I mean during those years when it was so bad and I was young, I would go to sleep every night crying and talking to God. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I got the answers. I didn't get the answers I wanted, and that was one of the reasons that when I went into my teens, I kind of got mad at God. You know, it's like, why am I even bothering anymore? But I had him to talk to. When I had nobody else to talk to, mm-hmm. I could talk to God. And I did that every night before I went to sleep. That was the only way I could go to sleep. I would go to sleep talking to God. Wow.
He's always there.
He never leaves us or forsakes us. Never,
once,
no matter what we're going through.
Once we accept
and,
him.
Like you, you know, your ministry, he walks with us through the wilderness.
Yes, he does.
And I don't, I mean, does he take us out of it? I don't think that often. No. Because we grow in the hard times.
Absolutely.
You know, if things are going rosy, you know, you see that in the history of the Israelites, you know. Mm-hmm. God would bless them And then they would go, oh, yeah, well, we don't, you know, how much do we need God? Things are going wonderful. Another verse that's very helpful is that, you know, nobody can understand when you're going through something, nobody can understand it better than somebody that's walked in those shoes. Somebody that hasn't gone through addiction can't understand what it's like and what's needed, you know, and once you heal, I mean, God healed me. He walked me through that process. So I can share that process with another person and I can give them hope because you feel hopeless because you don't know how to deal with it. But I, you know, they can find, as we say, find help and hope in our ministry. And, you know, if I can do it, then they can do it. You know, if God can heal me, he can heal them. So that verse is, it's 2 Corinthians 1:4, and it says, God comforts us in all our tribulation so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any trouble with the same comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. So he comforts us. He walks through the wilderness with us and brings us through so that we can do it for others. And that's what he's allowed us to do for all these years, is to help others through their wilderness.
That's awesome. Backing up just a little bit, because you've been telling us your story about being in Miami, but you're sitting in Pickens, South Carolina. So can you fill that gap in?
How we ended up in Pickens?
Another God story.
Okay, so Chris and I love to hike. And we like hiking. And we did hike in Miami, but it was in the Everglades where you slosh through the water in the muck, and then you come through. They're called hammocks, little mounds of land, and then you walk through the hammock. Then you go back into the water, and it's. I mean, we did it. We enjoyed it, but we really liked hiking in the mountains. So for us to come up to the mountains to hike was a 14-hour drive. You know, we'd have to go on vacation. It's a long, because to get out of, from Miami out of Florida is a whole day, practically. So it was a long drive. And so the desire of our hearts was to eventually move up where we would, you know, into the mountains or near the mountains where we could hike. And his sister lives in Marietta, Georgia, up a little northwest of Atlanta. So originally we were going to move up that way. And so we went, I think we had Thanksgiving with them 1 year. And so we went up into the next county above, she is in Cobb County above Atlanta. And we went into the next county above that. And they were throwing up houses with zero lot line, just like they were doing in Miami. And like, no, we want to get out of Miami because it's so crowded. I grew up there and it was very different when I was growing up. And so after we looked at those places and saw how it was, it's like, you know, nothing's going to keep Atlanta from going all the way to the state line in time. It's just going to eat up that whole part of the state. Mm-hmm. So the next vacation we took, I think we went to Amicalola Falls State Park, and we were so cool. We were doing our 14-hour drive. And I said, well, let me look on the map and see what's close enough to still go see, because I had family on my mother's side in Atlanta. She was from Atlanta, to go over and see them, and near where we could go hiking. So I looked on them. This was back when we had maps.
Paper maps.
No way. Paper maps. And so I looked on the map, and there was Greenville, South Carolina. And so we decided one day to drive over and check out the area. And so we came through. We ended up on 123 coming across. And so we were trying to find the Chamber of Commerce for Easley. And we were trying to find the one for Greenville, and we never did. But we went back and we started looking at demographics and all of that. And we knew we didn't want to go where all the growth was. We were leaving the big city and we wanted away from that. It was Greenville, Spartanburg, and Columbia. That triangle was where all the growth was. So we wanted to be on the other side. And then later I came up with my mom to check on my great aunt. And so we came over from Atlanta and checked out the area more. We drove all around. And so and then when we went back, we found a realtor online you know, in Pickens, and told her, you know, we're interested in the diamond shape from like Dacusville and Pickens and Easley and over to Greenville, you know, on this side of Greenville, all that. On spring break, we stayed in Easley. I think it was a Comfort Inn back then. And she would give us places to go look at. And we had 1 week that week. And Thursday, we looked at the house we ended up getting. And we had made a list of all the things that we needed and then the things that we wanted. And God's so amazing. The house that we found had everything we needed and what we wanted. So we made an offer. They accepted it. We went Friday night, set up the mortgage and all of that. And Saturday we were driving back so that we would be home to go back to work on Monday. And so where we were staying, I said, well, let me go to the front desk and see if they have a phone, an extra phone book that we can take so we can set up the utilities and everything. And so the woman that was at the desk was filling in for the person who was supposed to be working that had some kind of event she wanted to go to. And so they knew that we were here because we were looking for a place. So we told her where we found. She says, oh, that's right near me. That's like a mile from my house. I live right across the street from our church. And so she told us about it. And so when we moved up here, we went to that church because we had been in a home church. So we didn't want to go to a big church because we were used to a small church. I mean, it was like 30, 40 people. And so we went to this church. God had a job for us to do. It's like he sent us as missionaries to Pickens. But he also gave us the desire of our heart to be in the mountain, you know, near the mountains where we could go hiking and didn't have to drive 14 hours.
Yeah. And you were in ministry in Miami.
Yes.
And he told you.
Yeah.
When it was time. Oh,
we had been doing.
Or to move that.
Yeah, we had been doing the recovery ministry for 10 years in Miami before we moved. Mm-hmm. So we had our feet wet. We did that ministry at the church he put us in, but he used us in other ways because that church needed some help. And so he used us like missionaries. And we did everything he led us to do. And was it easy? No, because there were some difficulties. But we knew that, you know, we were going to be in whatever church God wanted us in. If it was difficult, we weren't going to leave because we were going through difficulties. We were there because God put us there. And so we did everything he asked us to do. There was some progress, and it's like he just decided, okay, you've done what I've asked you to do. Now I want you to go somewhere else. So in the course of a week, it was like we did a daily devotion. So one day it was in the Old Testament, in Genesis, where he told Abraham to leave his people and to go. And then another day it was in Hebrews, the Hall of Faith, in where it talks about that again. All right.
So that's feeling two. A theme here.
So yes, that's two. Mm-hmm. And then I turned on the radio one of those days in the week, and it was talking about that. And then that Sunday, after I heard it three times, the Sunday school lesson said, sometimes God doesn't want you to stay where you are. Mm-hmm. Whoa! I think I get the message. So, you know, we had learned that even if it doesn't make sense to us, when God asks us to do something, we don't dilly-dally doing it. We do whatever he asks us to do. You know, we had learned, you know, he's in control. Like I said, you know, we see a pixel. He sees the big picture. Whatever he wants us to do, we do. So we were very involved in that church. And so it took us a couple of weeks to tie up loose ends and all. And then we went the Sunday morning, 2 weeks later. And after the service, we told those that we were dealing with, you know, that we were involved with in leadership positions, that we wouldn't be back, that God had told us to go. I said, I'm not sure where we're going, but God told us to go, so we're going. And even one of the friends that I had there, she didn't happen to be there that Sunday. And when she found out, she says, did somebody make you mad? I said, listen, if I was going to leave because somebody made me mad, I would have been gone a long time ago. No, God told us to go. I'm not mad at anybody. Mm-hmm. And so it happened that the pastor there at that time had grown up at Blue Ridge View Baptist Church. And they had asked him to come back and preach homecoming. So he came back the following week, and he was talking about how, you know, nobody's really in charge, but everything gets done, and they're so loving. And so we decided, okay, we'll go there next. And we took Sunday night off, and we took Wednesday off because we had to kind of regroup. And that, so the next Sunday, we went to Blue Ridge View. And I sat there and cried through the whole service. Half of it was crying for what the previous church didn't have, and the other half was for what Blue Ridge View had. Walking in the door, we felt the love. It was like you could reach out and touch it. And to this day, it's still that way. And so we kind of figured this is where God wants us. But, you know, we've been very active in serving the Lord. And so we made an appointment to speak with Pastor Stewart, who was the pastor then, to see how we could plug in. So we go and we start, and we tell him what God has had us doing. And he tells us that he'd been praying for somebody to start a recovery ministry at Blue Ridge View. So we had our confirmation. I mean, we didn't even have to guess. Wow. We were sure that that was where God wanted us. And we've been there ever since. God has not told us to go anywhere else. And I know that if he ever wants us to move, he'll make it real clear.
Yes, he will.
Just like he did before. But it's such a perfect place because it's up on a hill. So from the road, nobody can tell. They can't even see cars up there from the road. So nobody knows who's there.
Right. For your recovery.
For our recovery ministry. You know, and a lot of people don't mind if people know. And it's like we say, you know, it's all confidential and anonymous. You know, we go on first names unless somebody wants to tell us. If it's somebody that goes to our church and we already know them. But, you know, I can say that I'm there, but I can't say that anybody else has been there. So that's why, you know, it's up to the individual. But some people, especially at the beginning, they don't want others to know that they're going. And so being up on that hill where nobody can see anything, and we meet on Tuesday where there's not other stuff going on, it works. Because at the other church, we actually had it in our house because a member of the church lived right across the street, and right across the street from the parking lot. So God knew we needed a better place.
Yeah. So it's Tuesday nights.
It's Tuesday nights at 6:30, and we meet in there's three buildings, one behind the other. So it's the first building, which is the sanctuary building, and there's a glass door on the side, and you know, you just, anybody that wants to come, go in the glass door and go all the way down to the end of the hall, and it's the last room on the right.
Okay, so that's Blue Ridge View
Baptist Church, and the address is 745 Wolf Creek Road in Pickens. Mm-hmm. We're not in an easy spot. We're kind of in the middle of hills and all of that, but Nav will get you there.
Yes. And if you would like more information or would like to contact Marie for more information, you can go to SharonHawkins.net. And click the contact tab and send me a note. I can connect you with Marie so she can help with your questions.
Yes.
Blue Ridge View was my former church, and I know that Marie and Chris have had this ministry for years, and I know that they've helped many people through those years.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Well, what an amazing story you have. I already knew your story, but I wanted our listeners to hear it. And it's such an example of how God can lead us and take care of us through all the wildernesses of our mm-hmm. lives. You've been through so many, many struggles, many wildernesses.
I had the long COVID thing.
Yes, yes.
I was on the couch for a year because I couldn't breathe. And he led me to the right yes. people and the right resources to know what to do. Because back then they didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and so I was able to recover from the long COVID. And, you know, I'm doing great. Yeah,
so he's such a personal
yes.
God, and
yes.
he takes care of everything that we need. So,
yep.
But thank you so much for your time and for sharing your beautiful story.
I was glad to do it because God's so awesome. You know, we just have to let him do it.
Yes.
We just have to surrender. That's the key, is we have to surrender. Once we surrender, he'll walk us through whatever we need.
Yes, absolutely. So just be encouraged today. If you're at a place where you know that you need help, God is always there. And there are people waiting that can disciple you, that can help you. And through the struggles of life, we're the hands and feet. The church
yes.
is the hands and feet. And so reach out to someone. If it's not, if this is not something, a program that you need, but there are other things in your life where you need discipleship, ask someone. You know, first be in a Bible-believing church.
Yes.
Get in your word like Maria
yes.
and Chris did.
And it doesn't have to be that you are dealing with an addict. There are people that have grown up in just unhealthy families for whatever reason. And the other thing that we've seen, and it was in my family, generation after generation after generation, there are alcoholics. And maybe your particular parent doesn't have that problem, but they've grown up in it and all the unhealthy relationship, they're not knowing how to have healthy relationships. That gets passed on until somebody gets into some kind of recovery and heals from it and deals with it. And it gets passed on to the next generation. You'll pass on your way of dealing with life to your kids unless you learn another way. So it's important.
So let it stop with us.
Yes.
Let it stop
with
us.
And, you know, AA didn't start until, I think it was somewhere in the 1930s is when they first started that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually based on the Sermon on the Mount.
Wow.
It's based on the Bible. And then it was Bill Wilson who started it. And then his wife started meeting with wives, because most of the, just because of the culture, most of the alcoholics were men.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how Al-Anon got started. And so it hasn't been very many generations that it's even been available. Plus, like my parents' generation, I mean, the reason I never got counseling from all the, you know, the issues that I had was because in that generation, you didn't go to counseling. You just did the best you could with what you had.
Mm-hmm.
And so even I was 18 when I told my mother of how it had affected me and all. And still, there was nothing about going to counseling. So yeah, that's the good thing is now this is available.
Right.
So
if you don't know Jesus as your Savior, that's step number one.
That is, the healing won't come without Jesus.
Yes.
True healing will not come without him. And
yes.
in the... that resurrection power.
Absolutely. So that's the first step. And if you would like more information about that, again, you can go to SharonHawkins.net, reach out to me at the contact tab, and I would love to talk with you about that. So just always remember, no matter what we go through, that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. And
absolutely.
No matter how hard it gets, as his children, he'll always make a way in the wilderness for
mm-hmm.
us. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Finding Grace in the Wilderness. May God lead you safely through your wilderness as you trust him, and may his river of grace always flood your desert times. He is doing a new thing. Let's not miss it. Subscribe or follow to make sure you don't miss a single episode. See you here next time.